it just is, it's a hopeful story, you know, and it's super cool in this industry. And to not have sold Montañez to a big conglomerate that maybe wouldn't have kept the rum to the standards and wouldn't have kept the B Corp and would have just turned it into a, you know, a production facility that was just cranking out rum. And now we get to continue on with Montañez being a premium product made in a beautiful location by real people.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program we're joined by Megan Campbell, Renee Newton, and Sean W. Richards, the new owners of Montañez Distillers in Crested Butte, Colorado. In early December, the distillery announced that founder Karen Hoskin had sold Montañez to Campbell, Newton, and Richards. Already Montañez's head distiller, Campbell is also taking on the role of COO. Newton, who has been with Montañez since 2013 and also had a tenure as head distiller, is taking on the role of chief experience officer and head of the tasting room and retail. And Richards, who is based in Houston, brings 20 years of marketing experience to his role as chief marketing officer. In this episode, the trio talks about how they came together to join a partnership, their plans to honor the distillery's past while also asserting their vision for its future, the current and future state of the American rum industry, and they also tease some upcoming products. To kick things off, I asked each guest to talk about their first memory of knowing that the distilling industry was for them, or when they knew that they wanted to someday own a distillery. Megan starts, followed by Renee, and then Sean.
Yeah, so the first time I thought about working in a distillery wasn't until I was on the production floor moving hoses around. I had a buddy working at a distillery now called Oxbow Rum in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I was at a weird crossroads in my life where I didn't know what I wanted to do with my career. And he was a good friend and got me in the industry. And from the second I was, you know, working on the production floor, I said, this is where I want to be. And this is where I want to lead a career path. So I kind of just got thrown into it and realized very quickly it was something I could see myself doing for a long time.
Yep. So for me, never thought I'd end up in the alcohol industry per se. I was doing some research up here in Crested Butte, a little town called Gothic. Casually got to know the old owners of Montañez and then learned to distill. And for me, I think I always knew after that point that I wanted to own a distillery, run a distillery. I often dreamed about owning Montañez. I'd been with the company almost 10 years. And I was hoping somewhere along the way, she was going to kind of pass the reins over and hand the torch over. And it just so happened the timing was right last December for all of us to take over.
And Sean, what about you?
I had kind of a non-traditional path to get to this spot, but I think the first time I started thinking about owning a distillery was around 8 or 9 years ago. Quickly put it to the back of my mind after about 4 months because I had just had a second child. And you know how that goes if you, you're on a set career path, which, you know, I have been in marketing for about the last 20 years, brand strategy, sports marketing, and entertainment of one facet or another. And then about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, it just keeps coming up. Started reaching out to people about just learning about the industry and doing as much as I could to gain knowledge. Found a few mentor types along the way to help me on my journey. And one of them was the founder of Montañez. And that's kind of how I made my way into the partnership with Megan and Renee, who accepted me after we had a few interesting conversations. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I started thinking about quite some time ago and just couldn't put it out of my mind.
So did Karen essentially kind of bring you all together? Like, obviously, Renee, Megan, you'd been working there. She'd been talking to you, Sean. Like, it kind of walked me through that, how it all came to be and, like, what you remember about those first conversations.
So for Megan and I, we were kind of talking about maybe doing our own little thing, right? So branching out, starting our own little project. My dad actually was like, you should talk to Karen and see if she's interested in selling the company to you guys. And in a twist, she was. So for us, you know, we were kind of working on another end together. And then when we brought that to Karen, she was like, well, I have this, you know, great option for you guys. He's been talking to Karen for a while too. She kind of connected the three of us together. And I think for me, our first Zoom meeting that we had, it was like, yes, this is meant to be. What Sean brings to the table, what Meg brings to the table, what I bring to the table really create a perfect trifecta of talents.
Meg, Sean, anything to add to that? Just kind of like memories of how it all came together?
Just kind of ditto to what Renee said. It was one of those things where, you know, our first couple conversations were over Zoom for many months and we got a really good feel for Sean, and it felt like it was someone that we had known for a long time. And I'm a big team player, and I feel like Sean had a lot of traits that I'm very unfamiliar with in the marketing world. So it just seemed like a good fit. And, you know, we're all going into this with fresh eyes, and why not work together on that?
And I second everything they both said. You know, it was kind of like our paths merged. I was focusing on another thing as well, and you know, heard about Meg and Renee, and you know, I think it was all kind of like a natural fit, because we all bring a little bit of different things to the table.
And I'm curious, so like when did this kind of start? I mean, obviously you all made the announcement in December. Like, what's the process look like? How long does it take for that to happen?
I think we moved a lot quicker than maybe some other companies did. Megan and I had been with Montañez for a long time, so we kind of knew the way Montañez worked a little bit. I think we didn't sit down with Karen until the end of September.
Oh, wow.
So the end of September. And like at that point, the snowball effect, like the snowball was rolling, and it moved really, really quickly from there.
Really, I mean, quick. That's not a lot of time. Do you feel like you've really even had enough time to like step back and think like, oh yeah, we, this is ours now. Like, and how does it feel? How does it fit? You know?
For me, it feels really natural. You know, I think that I'd kind of hoped this was always going to happen, and working in all the different departments with Montañez, it feels really natural, but it also feels like I'm on the outside looking in, right? Like sometimes I think I'm just washing dishes at the tasting room. It's hard to look around and think that like, wow, this is ours. We actually own Montañez. So it's kind of surreal on one side, but then it's also just fits. It feels like it's the right place and that we're the right team to take the reins over.
And Sean, I'm curious, like your thoughts on that, especially because you're based in Houston, right? And so like kind of just entering the distilling world, and being, you know, I guess remote, right? Like, what's this like for you now, like being at the helm of a distillery?
I don't think there's been a lot of time for reflection, but I've been an entrepreneur off and on throughout my professional career. And, you know, I think a lot of times that's just how it goes. It's not that, I mean, you're never content. You're never content as an entrepreneur, right? And that's part of it. And I expected that. I do have to say I am you know, I do sometimes just like pinch myself. I'm like, yo, you're bugging. Y'all are doing like some really great things. And I'm just happy, like, you know, I have a capable team of really cool and great people to work with on this journey. Right. Like, but, you know, time to take it in is, you know, it's a work in progress because we, you know, we're on the grind right now. And it's, I think that's part of any entrepreneur, any, if you're an entrepreneur, that's part of the game, period. You know, I do take some guidance and from, Meg and Renee, especially because they have a lot more experience. And then of course, you know, I have friends and mentors in the industry, you know, kind of on all sides, but, you know, it's just getting in, drinking out of like three different fire hoses and, you know, figuring out how we can all make this work together as a team, which, you know, we're committed to doing.
I think that, I mean, obviously Karen's name has come up a few times, and it's, I guess, right now, like I see a photo of her on your homepage, and I assume that's very intentional because like she was this brand. But I'm curious, like, how you all approach like stepping aside from Karen being the face of this brand. And then also just like, how involved is she at this moment? Is she still kind of, or is she gone? Like, what does Montañas look like right now without, you know, Karen Hoskin as the owner?
Good question.
Great question, John.
We might have known this one was coming. No, and that's a great question. It's definitely something we have thought about in like our planning sessions when we were thinking about taking over, and then still, you know, all the time now. I think we are going to start focusing on the product itself, and focusing on those high mountain American rum traditions and how we can play the fun in rum. I think we all, as a team of ownership, come from different backgrounds. So it's how can we incorporate those backgrounds where we come from into, you know, rum making. Me, Renee, and Sean, we all have lived in the South. So bringing those Southern roots to play, making Montañas an approachable brand to, you know, the common drinker. I'm not good at answering questions, but someone else can.
Well, to be fair, I asked like three questions in one, right? So.
And Karen started Montañas, what, 15 years ago? And she was kind of doing a lot of it on her own. So, you know, Karen was feet on the ground. Karen was helping with distilling and helping with the tasting room. And, you know, I think somewhere along the way, Montañas got on a trajectory that was bigger than one person was capable of handling. So yes, for a long time, Karen was the brand, and she is still going to be associated with Montañas for a long time. But I think it was really important for her to give Montañas over. And so she doesn't really have any, she doesn't have any decision-making in the company. So we're not having to pass things by her to make sure it fits in her vision. I think Karen knew that between Meg, Sean, and I, the vision that we have collectively is what's going to continue to make Montañas successful. And that is making Montañas fun, bringing community together, getting it outdoors, and not just being based around one person as a solo entity of a brand, kind of opening that up to the rest of the world.
Well, I mean, I guess now's a good time then to kind of talk about like what your vision moving forward is. And you've kind of already hinted at it. But like, are there big changes coming, or is it just kind of like a, you know, similar trajectory, outside of those things that you've already mentioned?
Can I kind of reflect back on some of the things you asked in the previous question real quick?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we didn't want to do is just, you know, come in, take over, and immediately just, you know, breakneck speed change a lot of things, right? Like there is a core group of supporters at Montagna that have been around with the brand since its founding. I mean, they're very important to our future. And to, you know, they made Montagna, right? And we want to honor them. And we also, we're going to take a more natural approach to kind of reframing Montagna's brand, right? And one of those natural approaches isn't just to kind of rip down history like it wasn't there. I think there's a time for like honoring the past. And, you know, that past is built on, you know, the back of Karen and, my partner Renee, who had a heavy hand in shaping that, and Megan, who, you know, has led a lot of the recent changes and initiatives that have brought Montagna out further into the public and, you know, American rum as a whole. So I think that, you're going to see changes, there's just going to be more of a natural kind of speed to where that's done with respect to the past of the brand.
What do you all see as the future of American rum in general? And this is kind of sidetracking from everything, but you brought up American rum, and we just had a member profile on Cotton and Reed in DC. And I was, one of the questions is like, who do you admire? And his aunt, Jordan Cotton's, the co-founder, answer was, anyone making rum in America, like, cheers to you, like, hats off to you. So like, how big of a challenge is it in 2024 to go out and sell people on American rum? Like, what makes you all still so excited that, hey, this is the right space to be in? So excited that you're willing to take over a distillery.
Well, yeah, I think rum is definitely, becoming more popular. I think for us, we are trying to show people the traditional ways that rum was made. You know, with Montagna's, we don't add any sugar back to the rum. We don't add any coloring or flavorings to the rum. It's just pure, easy sipping rum. We like to age in whiskey barrels, which smooths it out. And I think a lot of people just have a past with sugary rums that has deterred them from enjoying classic rums. And so for us, it is, or for me, you know, it's showing people that rum is smooth, showing people these old methods of high mountain aging, and that it's just not Bacardi, you know, it's not Captain Morgan's. And that is what most of the general public associate with rum. And for us, we're just trying to say that, yes, we are a premium product. You know, we use amazing sugar cane. We have amazing water. We use, you know, solid barrels to age in, but that it's approachable, you know, it's easy to sip on by itself, but it's easy to blend into fun cocktails. And just sticking with the trajectory of rum becoming more popular.
And, you know, you kind of brought up, just the high mountains in general. But I'm curious to hear one of you all, maybe Megan or Renee, talk about just living in Crested Butte. Like, kind of for people that haven't been there, like, I lived in Colorado for 2 years and I kind of got up there once, but it's a ways from anything, right?
I think we should both answer it, because I think we both have good things to say. Renee's been here a lot longer than I have. I moved to Crested Butte about 3 years ago, and from the first couple of days, it really stole my heart. And I think what keeps this community together is the community. We live in a beautiful space, but also nature can be isolating. And I think, you know, it's really the people and the friendships that I have made here will last me a lifetime. And, you know, people stay here for a reason, and it's the people that keep them here. And, you know, community is one of our, you know, things that Montagna wants to harp on, and, you know, having more community events and bringing that out past Crested Butte and those kind of brand activations. And, you know, every time you look out your window, like no matter what kind of day you're having, there's nature outside to look at. And that's kind of one thing that really keeps me going. Cause you know, in the ownership life, we're just grinding nonstop. And I kind of like Sean's fire hose thing. And it's nice to, you know, I can always take a peek outside and see that snow-capped mountain or, you know, the wildflowers growing outside. And it makes us very thankful and truly blessed to where we're at. And I think it's pretty dang awesome that we're making rum at 9,000 feet up in elevation. Me and Renee have both lived in Louisiana. We're using Louisiana sugarcane. I sometimes tell people that and they think I brought the sugarcane on my back, but that's something Montagna's been doing for quite some time. And I'm very thankful to live here, and it's a beautiful place. And I think the small community is fitting for our small, you know, our craft rum scene, you know, and we've had a lot of great support over the years, and Montagna has kind of always been of like a fostering home for the community, and locals really support us, and we're excited for the future. I don't know if that answered the question, but.
Totally. Yeah. Renee, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, what was the specific question again?
Well, it just kind of paint a picture of living in Crested Butte.
Yeah. So for me, Megan too, you know, I moved from the south to Crested Butte in the middle of January. The first time it snowed, you know, I thought I didn't have to go to work. I thought it was a snow day. And being in Crested Butte just completely changed my view of what I wanted in life. You know, I never thought I would want to live in such a small town because, you know, growing up in small towns in the South, it's like, it's always one thing after the next. But the community here in Crested Butte, we all share certain ideals that bring us together and keep us together. And one of those is the outdoors. You know, the hiking, the waterfalls, the flowers, the rafting, the skiing. So you bond with your community based on these shared interests. And for such a small town, the amount of tourism that we get here, because everyone else wants to experience what we have on a daily basis. So, you know, we get tourists from all over the world that want to come and share this experience. And I think that that's one of the reasons that Montagna's works in such a small town, because people come to Crested Butte to visit and they want to enjoy things that the locals enjoy. And they also want to be able to take that home and share it with their friends and family where they're from. So coming and experiencing Montagna's and then being able to take some of that rum home with them is a huge asset to us. And it's definitely something that we want to put a lot of time and thought into, is how do we engage with these tourists who do help our city. They are a part of our city. They are a part of our culture. How do we bring them in to share this beautiful thing that we have, not only in nature and outside, but when you're sitting and hanging out with your friends, having some cocktails, you know, we want to merge those two.
How many states are you all in? Available in right now for those folks who come from out of state and want to enjoy your spirits after?
For sure. I would say the most accessible option for people for out of state is our DTC website by montagnarum.com. We can ship to 44 states.
Okay.
So that's kind of the easiest, and that's what we tell people going into our tasting room. We do have distribution channels set up in about, I think it's going on 16 states. But as far as finding it in the stores, we're really focusing on Colorado and Texas right now.
Okay. Well, and then going back to those locals in Crested Butte, I'm just curious, what has the reaction been like from your local community since you all have taken over?
I think overall it's been extremely positive. You know, we are a younger generation. We have different ideas about what Montagna's possibilities are. And I think overall, everyone is excited to be a part of this next generation. You know, Megan and I have been here a long time, so we have a following already too. Working in the service industry in Crested Butte for 14 years, I know a lot of people, and we're getting a lot of these people into the tasting room that maybe haven't been there before. And everyone's excited for Sean too, because Texas loves Crested Butte. Like, we get a lot of tourists from Texas, and a lot of Texans own second homes here. And so bringing Sean in kind of opened up the realm of Montañas, and it's giving us a bigger footprint. And I think overall, pumped. I mean, town is excited. You know, we had a good turnout for our party, you know, when we took over, and just great feedback all around.
I will say, from my 2 years in Colorado, Texas license plates are like the number two license plate for sure, especially in the summer. So I know that sustainability has been a big part of the brand, like from the beginning. Will that continue? And is being a B Corp also important moving forward?
I would say absolutely. That's, you know, when we were talking about taking up ownership and what values we wanted to continue to hold, and sustainability is definitely at the forefront. I think that is just what the consumer wants these days, especially the younger generation. They want to know who's behind the makers, where are they sourcing things, you know, what are their day-to-day practices like, how are they employing their employees. Yeah, B Corp is definitely a thing. We actually are going to have a big application process to do this year to renew it.
It's such a cool thing, because there's still, I think it's still less than like 10 distilleries, 10 craft distilleries. It might be up to 5 now at this point. But it's just a very cool thing that you can do that.
For sure. And we're very, very thankful for Karen, you know, spearheading that for us. And I think, you know, the B Corp thing is really, it makes us look at the company as a whole, you know, so what are we doing in marketing? What are we doing sales wise? What are we doing out of our tasting room and production, employment practices and that? And I kind of like that holistic approach to business. And it's cool to be a part of that.
I'm wondering if you all could just kind of walk me through now, like what the actual operations and tasting room look like now, because I know you all expanded recently, and I think you're in like a different building downtown, is that right, for the actual tasting room? So like, yes. if I'm coming to visit, if I'm a tourist coming to visit, what's the experience like for Montaña?
Well, at our previous location, which was only 2 doors down from our current location, the distillery was in the same building as the tasting room. So about 2 years ago, Karen moved a couple doors down to a new location for the tasting room. And then Megan helped outfit a whole expansion for our distillery. So we went from 100-gallon pot stills, we had 2 of those, to a 500-gallon alembic still. So we decreased size for the tasting room, but we increased production at the distillery. So the tasting room now is a cute, intimate location. It's right off of Elk. We have stuck with the concept of the beautiful craft cocktails, you know, fresh fruits, fun infusions, lots of different profiles to fit everyone's palate. And we'll have some outdoor seating this summer, which is great, because then you can take in, you know, the 80 degree, no humidity weather that Crested Butte is so famous for, I'm sure. So yeah, we're excited. We like the new location. I think the big thing right now is bringing Sean, Megan and I's ideas and energy into the building. And that means bringing a lot of community. We're hosting events this off season and this summer, and Yeah, just making it feel like ours.
I'm also wondering, what can you tell me about any upcoming releases or any other new, just kind of like on the liquid side of things, anything that you're excited about? And I realize, you know, some of these things you may not be able to talk about, but whatever you can talk about.
I think we can talk about a couple things. You know, one of the things that kind of Renee harped on in our tasting room, we do a lot of really cool infusions with our Platino, so our white rum, and they've been really popular. And years after years, Montagna's always got questions of, where can I buy these infusions? Can I buy them out of your tasting room? And the answer has always been, you know, you have to enjoy them here. So I think one of the things we're going to work on this year is kind of bringing that fun in rum again. So, you know, we have our core SKUs that we have a white, we have our dark, you know, we age, we have some higher end ones that are finished in wine barrels and whiskey barrels, and now it's more flavor forward. So we're going to do some cool flavored rums this summer and see how those goes in the Colorado market. And some, yeah, some fun stuff. So they'll, the common consumer can be on the lookout for some nice flavored liqueurs coming from us sometime this year.
Nice. Sean, were you going to add anything to that?
I was actually going to add to the previous question when you asked before the follow-up that Meg just answered. But, you know, I think when we talk about community, right, like there's Crescent Butte and then there's the American rum community as well. And I think, you know, collaborating and, you know, meeting with everybody out and letting, you know, letting people know who we are and them get a sense of us, I think that, you know, that's going to also be part of like the reframe, right? There's a lot of people doing great stuff out there who, you know, have known about Montagna and drank Montagna probably for some time now. And, you know, they might not have had too much experience with the brand outside of meeting Karen, right? We're definitely trying to invite people in a little more and definitely make sure we become active in the American rum community, right? And you know, build alliances and again, you know, have fun. I think that, you know, that's one of the things that we would really like to do moving forward, to reframe and like Meg is talking on some of these infusions and things like that. Like, we definitely want to look at the innovative side and experiential side of things moving forward.
How, as a, you know, a marketing strategist, like how excited and enthused are you by like the work ahead of you?
I don't know if I can like really measure that. One, you know, I love Montagna just as a product, right? I love the rum. Two, from the American rum side of things, for it to be such, you know, it's one of the foundational spirits of America, right? But feels like the story hasn't been told yet. And I'm, you know, hope, like I'm excited that we at Montagna get to play a part and kind of writing that narrative. And then I also feel kind of like a rising tide lifts all boats. So, you know, we're happy to put in where we can and really excited, just, you know, because the story hasn't been written yet. Right. And I think that's one of the things that's really exciting about what we're doing here at Montagna and the future of Montagna, but also for, you know, American rum in general.
Is there anything just from the on the topic of like, you know, taking over as the new ownership group that that we didn't talk about that you'd want people to know, or anything just that you all are excited to share that we didn't cover?
I think one of the cool things about our story is that, you know, Karen allowed us an opportunity for employees to take over a business. And that's kind of rare in our industry. And yes, she's kind of not removing herself from the brand, but she's not as big of a part of the brand anymore. But yet she allowed us to have this opportunity. And I think one of the cool things for that is just saying that, like, you know, don't give up, or don't, you know, cross it off your mind that you can't do this. You know, I think it's huge that Megan, Sean, and I have this company now, and having two former owners and, you know, bringing a gentleman in from Texas. It just is, it's a hopeful story, you know, and it's super cool in this industry. And to not have sold Montañas to a big conglomerate that maybe wouldn't have kept the rum to the standards and wouldn't have kept the B Corp and would have just turned it into a, you know, a production facility that was just cranking out rum. And now we get to continue on with Montañas being a premium product made in a beautiful location by real people.
And just so, with your stamp on it now.
Yeah.
That was great, Renee.
Real.
Does anybody else have anything to add to that? Because I have one final question that I want each of you to ask or to answer, but unless Megan or Sean, if you have anything to add.
I'll just say that I, you know, love the craft beverage community, and I'm very thankful for everyone out there, and we're all one big family doing a great thing. And I'm just very thankful to be in this industry, and let's get people drinking more rum.
And I think they nailed it. So I'm a, that's all I have to add.
All right. So my last question is, again, so for each of you, advice, you know, you brought up the fact that it's great that you were able to take this over. So I think for Renee and Megan, I'm curious what your advice is to somebody who's working in a distillery and is thinking about, you know, maybe trying to branch out on their own, or maybe it's similar, like, you know, taking over from the current owner. And then also, Sean, just advice to anyone who's thinking about jumping into this world from kind of like, you know, your standpoint.
Yeah, kind of how I personally operate is I'm a trust your gut person. And, you know, if you want to move up in this craft beverage scene, whether it's within a company or you want to branch out and start your own, it's like, you know, trust what's inside of you. And, you know, rely on the community here that we have at ACSA. And, you know, there's a lot of great resources. There's a lot of people that want to mentor and see you do great things for the industry. And there's a lot of books and literature. And I feel like there's so many resources out there to help people, and lean on your friends and ask those questions. And that's one of the biggest things I love about going to the convention every year, is just kind of hearing what other people are doing and, you know, ping ponging ideas off of each other. And I, you know, when I started in this industry, which wasn't too long ago, it was probably about 5 years ago, I did not think that first year I would ever be a distillery owner. But, you know, I really fell in love with the roles, and I leaned on my boss at the time and asked a bunch of questions, and they really supported me and fostered me an environment for me to be able to move up in my career. And I'm very thankful for starting off as an assistant production person to owning a distillery is pretty wild. And anyone can do it. You just got to trust in yourself, and people are going to believe in you if they see that.
Well, my advice for, who are we talking to? Yeah. My advice for kind of the place that we ended up in is keep those connections open. You never know who you're going to run into that has some information or some ideas for where you're trying to go, and keep those bridges going. You know, like Megan was saying, ACSA, such an amazing opportunity. And especially for us, you know, we just took over. What are the odds that it's in Denver that year? and how many conversations we had and how much knowledge we got from that conference to take back with us. I mean, it's on all of our Trello boards. It's on, you know, every email we're sending every day is about people and ideas from information we picked up at ACSA. So yeah, my advice, make those phone calls, answer those emails, build relationships with people that are actually in the industry that can help promote or help, you know, drive you to that next level, because you never know what you're going to learn from someone. And one of the things we're trying to do right now is own home in Colorado. And so, you know, out on the road, and we're meeting people, and these people want to see you succeed. And it, you know, and we want to see them succeed. So yeah, just, you know, keep an open mind.
I would echo those points, right? Like, you know, you got to see it through, right? And if you want to do something and you want it bad enough, it like burns in you. It's easier said than done, but it's just to just do it. Right. You know, if you're making a good or bad decision, and if it's good, you know, you can do all the projections you want to do in the world, and you can, you know, put, you know, PowerPoints together and do research and meet and, you know, talk to everybody you can, but you, at some point you just have to do it. Right. And that would be my advice, is to just do it. And then to echo their points, there are a lot of people that want to see you succeed, right? Especially if, you know, you're doing the work. I think that that's one thing people respect. There's also people that'll try to tax you, right? And like, get you to pay them for everything they tell you. You know, there's, you might want to stay away from that side of things, but like, just, you know, keep it what you're doing. And if you believe in yourself and you have a goal, just take that first step and then keep walking, right? And, you know, go to the events, go to ACSA if you can. Or, you know, do what I did at first, which is kind of watch some of the online resources and do some of the workshops that you can, and learn and meet people and talk to everybody you can, you know, because that's how you start. And then once you do that, keep going. And, you know, it's there's going to be some pain, and there's going to be some happiness, but that's all part of the process. So commit to it and keep trying and keep plugging away at it, and you know, you'll make headway.
And don't be scared of the fire hose.
Do not be scared of the fire hose.
Multiple.
Well, three.
Three at once.
Yes. Yeah, right. Right.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Megan Campbell, Renee Newton, and Sean W. Richards for joining us. You can learn more about Montagna at montagnarum.com. That's M-O-N-T-A-N-Y-A for Montagna. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.